One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. That kicks off our Friday edition of the show. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. And on the Creative City Show, we talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future every day, Monday through Friday, at our new time, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on 1030 The Voice. I believe Tucson is at a tipping point, not our first, not our last, but we are at a point in time where the decisions that we make, the conversations that we have over the next 5 or 10 years will decide what our next 50 look like. And so we do this show to have those conversations and to talk about people and ideas shaping that future. We've had a really strong week. Thank you for listening and engaging. The only difference between doing what we do in a closet at my house and here in studio is you, Tucson, this live local feedback loop of conversations and our phone lines and opportunities to talk about the issues that matter to us is what makes this show that it is. So thank you so much. We have a packed Friday for you as we close out the week. We'll introduce her in studio here in a second, but I have Allison Solomon, the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Pima Alliance, here in studio. We're going to cover a lot of topics related to our region. And then George Hammond, University of Arizona Economic and Business Research Center Director, will come in with a Southern Arizona Economic Update. So here we go. Buckle in. Allison, it's good to have you here.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome. Happy Friday to you.
Oh, gosh. Happy Friday on this short week.
I know, right? That's the benefit of a long weekend, right? Is the long week.
The short week after? Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel, though, that I still have to do the same amount of work. It's just in a shorter amount of time. But I'm really grateful that you decided to have me on before George, because he's not an act I would have to I would want to
He's a hard act to follow.
Hard act to follow. He's such a knowledgeable man.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to have him in our community.
It's very true. It's very true. So, Allison, we're going to get into a lot of different topics, but just for any of our listeners who haven't had the opportunity to brush shoulders before with the Metropolitan Pima Alliance, what do you guys do? What's your focus and way of introduction?
Sure. So, Metropolitan Pima Alliance is a nonprofit organization that was started in 1997, and we advocate for a prosperous community through collaborative real estate and land use development policies. That was my elevator speech. I've been practicing it for about a year and a half now, so yes, thank you. We were modeled actually after Valley Partnership, which is a group in Phoenix, and the goal was to bring together the public and private sectors. So I'm really proud of this organization. One of the reasons I absolutely adore it is because we work to foster civil discourse. So we work to get everybody talking, and we work to have positive conversations. Not that we're unwilling to address the hard topics. We absolutely do, and we dig into them, but we really try to understand different perspectives and see where there's room to collaborate to move forward. I do feel that development is the ultimate economic development tool, and that's what we work towards. We work towards creating a community that can develop in a good, thought-out, responsible manner. And because of that, we really do a lot of regionalism and regionality. We are constantly working with the different municipalities and encouraging a higher level view. So as we move forward into this kind of next phase of Tucson, and as all of our municipalities start to merge more and more, we look to see where there are opportunities to improve upon our policies. We would like to see more collaboration in general. Mm-hmm. And that's not just between the public and private sectors. That's
right.
Between the municipalities as a whole. And the formation of PAG and the RTA has gone a long way towards that. So
cool.
That's what we're about. We predominantly work on issues related to the commercial development sector. We're engaged in everything from wastewater to roads to development policies to land use code. It's a lot of reading.
It's a lot. You read a lot.
It's lot of reading. Yes. I've learned a lot too, which it never gets boring.
Absolutely.
And I have the opportunity to work with a lot of other great community leaders. And I also get the opportunity to work on a lot of very complicated and touchy issues, as mm-hmm. you and I have yep. been collaborating on a few recently.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to a planner the other day up in Phoenix, actually. Yeah. And I said, you know, my neighborhood is working on a neighborhood plan. Mm-hmm. What is the power of that, right? What is the power of it? Because I get asked that by a lot of neighbors. And one of the things that she said, and it speaks to what you just did, is she said, good land use policy, good public policy actually can speak to and define good development. And that really got me interested, because so often we think about development, we think about what we don't want.
Absolutely.
Or what is, and I'm air quoting, what is not good, or
sure.
or what would be a better no growth way of doing it, right? A lot of the conversations that we get stuck in Tucson, but I don't think we think a lot about what is the good kind look like. Not that there's a good and bad kind, but what is the best possible use of the land, our built environment, so on and so forth. I don't feel like we have productive enough conversation around what does our ideal 21st century city look like and how do we get there. When you talked about how development as an economic development policy, it just got me thinking, and I would imagine that's a lot of what you guys focus on, is how do we get to yes in a productive way.
Absolutely. And how do we get to yes in a way that's going to benefit everybody? That's the ideal situation. It might not always happen, but that's always the goal. And I think it gets talked about a lot, this good versus bad development. And I think what happens is sometimes we see things that get put in, get built, and the community has an adverse reaction. And that's okay. That's going to happen sometimes. That's life. You know, not everything works perfectly, but it's a matter of how you move forward from that. And I think far too often we get stuck on just trying not to let that happen again. But I think in trying not to let that happen again, we sometimes limit ourselves and we limit our scope. And that's where I really think it's important that the leaders of the community do come out and speak to it. And that's something I'm really passionate about. And that's one of the reasons back in the day, I actually joined TYP and was on their board when I was much younger and more fun. And the reason for that was to try to engage my fellow young professionals and show them the purpose of advocacy and show them the tool. When you talk about where are we going to be in the next 50 years, what does this community look like?
Right.
A lot of that is going to be up to you and I's generation. I think that our generation needs to get engaged. I think that they need to become the community leaders, and they need to start having the conversations of what do they want the Tucson that they grow up in, that they grow old in, and that they raise their kids in to look like. Because I feel as of right now, the conversation is not very balanced. I don't feel there are many people who are in your and I's demographic that are coming out and talking about what we want to see. I know you and I offline have had lots of conversations about increasing density and how we like what we've seen in downtown. And I know that can get tricky sometimes, right? With increased density, there come some concerns. However, I think that it can have a lot of positive benefits too. As mm-hmm. again, we've seen the benefits in downtown. We've seen the benefits around the University District. And I think we're about to see some on Fourth Avenue, which, you know, Fourth Avenue is... what's happening on it right now is a great example of how to do it collaboratively. You know, the Fourth Avenue residents and the merchants, they've all been working very actively, both behind the scenes and, you know, in the public eye, to be a part of that conversation. And they're not doing it in a reactive way. I'd say a lot of it's been proactive, which is going to lead to some really great projects down that area that I'm excited to see.
Yeah. We've got about a minute, Allison, to our last break. We're going to get into how do young professionals, you are one, for our listeners that can't see you, you're to be congratulated. Really, this is not a woo moment. You're to be congratulated. You're a younger professional at an executive director role. Congratulations to you. That deserves to be recognized since we can't see you. So I will tell our listeners that you still look young. You still look young.
Well, you know, it's all the Botox.
We're going to talk a little bit about young professionals and advocacy at some level in the next segment, but in maybe 30 seconds, what are the two or three kind of issues in Tucson that maybe need the most young professional attention towards to get to that 50-year future?
Sure. So right now, we see Marana going through their general plan. And when I talk about Tucson, I generally talk about the region as a whole. I'm referring to our metro area. And Marana is going through a general plan update. The city of Tucson is about to start their general plan update in 2020. And I think that those are very important documents. Those are documents that actually have some, you know, some synergy with the neighborhood plans. But those are the ones by which we plan where their community is moving forward for the next 10, 20 years, so on and so forth. And that's really where you can come out. You can talk to your elected officials and you can let them know what kind of community you want to see moving forward.
Let's get into that on the other side of our break. We're with Allison Solomon, the executive director of the Metropolitan Pima Alliance. We're going to talk about some of the key issues that may have the most importance in shaping the next 50 years and how younger professionals, we'll say 45 South for the course of conversation, can be more involved in that. We saw a lot of the numbers come out of the primary election, for example.
Absolutely.
As usual, young professionals, young people are not represented according to, you know, their vote does not represent their demographic. In around the country, it's 57-year-olds as the average voter, which is awesome, but we don't have younger people yet fully engaged. We're going to talk about some of this and platform and advocacy and voice and how we can be more engaged. Much more coming with Allison Solomon. Tucson, don't go away. We're just getting started on this Friday, September 6th. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show. You're with me, your host, Zach Yenser. I'm joined in studio by Allison Solomon, the executive director of the Metropolitan Pima Alliance. And just walking into the green room, as well as our next guest, George Hammond, U of A Economic and Business Research Center director. So stay tuned at the bottom of the hour. He'll come in for a Southern Arizona economic update. Allison Solomon, you are a younger professional.
Yes.
And the executive director of a major organization in town that's focused on development. I'd love to pick back up on where we ended and talk about maybe a younger perspective on the issues that shape the next 50 years. And I think people like you and I feel alone sometimes in that there's not enough of us speaking into the key issues. And I actually talk to older individuals in the community that are actually asking people that look more like you and I to get more involved. So this is an intergenerational thing.
Absolutely.
We're hearing this from both ends of the age spectrum. So we want to talk about that as well. So let's get into it.
Great. So since we keep skirting it, I am 32, so I do fall within that young professional category.
I think I've never asked before.
You
volunteered that, just
it's
to be clear
polite.
For our
yes,
listening audience.
You're a gentleman. You did not ask my age. I volunteered my age. I have no shame in it. I was actually very excited to turn 30 because I felt like it was going to turn me into a true adult and I would get, you know, I would get past that phase of being a 20-something. It's been fun. I think people are right when they say 30s are a great decade. Also looking forward to the 40s. I hear those are great too. So you and I were talking the other day, and we seem to fall a lot on the housing issue when we talk.
Yeah.
We talk about density, we talk about housing, and I think it's because within the last few years, you and I have both been on the quest to find a home. You know, somewhere where we can put down roots, really become engaged in this community. And it's funny because George actually just came and spoke to Breakfast Club of Tucson, which I'm a part of, on Tuesday, and he was talking a lot about housing affordability, and that gets us into housing stock. And when I was recently engaged in doing a search for a home, I was looking within the Tucson metro region. Predominantly, I was trying to move into Midtown Tucson. I work downtown. I traveled to Marana, Sarita, Oro Valley, all across the region. And so being central was important to me. What I noticed was it's hard to find a home that I could afford. And I consider myself a relatively successful young professional. And I think it's a conversation that we need to start having more of. My personal opinion is that there is a limited housing stock, and that's supported by some numbers and some studies that I'm sure George is going to share with you. But I also think that Tucson in particular is still behind the curve when it comes to increasing wages. You said you were recently going, or you recently said that you were going to be going to Austin to look into housing?
Yeah, and San Antonio.
San Antonio, okay. Yeah. And those are communities that I'm guessing are facing some of the same issues we are with young professionals, housing gentrification.
Yeah. And San Antonio actually has a better cost of living than Tucson does. I said it.
As somebody who's grown up and lived the majority of my life here and has spent most of my career here, I've seen a huge shift in the last 10 years in our affordability.
It's
absolutely.
Changed. It's still affordable.
Sure.
But it's not the affordability of 10 years ago.
Absolutely. I also think of my opinion is that the word affordable is a relative term.
Correct. So you have a we can wrap this up pretty quick. You have a a background. I mean, obviously your day job is focusing on the kind of land use and development side of these conversations. What are you hearing, or what are you maybe encouraging those in our community to think about in terms of adding more stock, adding more supply, increasing wages? How are you leading out in that conversation? How would you urge that conversation to be led from a younger perspective?
Sure. So I think a lot of young professionals are really concerned with the culture of where they live. They want a vibrant nightlife. They want restaurants to go to. They want museums. They want things to do. They want to have a great time when they're not working. You know, the work-life balance is shifting. With each generation, it's becoming more and more kind of life-focused, right? Mm-hmm. And what we know in development is that commercial follows homes. So before you can go on ahead and have the great nightclubs, the restaurants, the improv shows, the, you know, the playformance kind of things that everybody's enjoying these days, you really need to have those rooftops. And if we are not making that accessible to our younger generation, it's hard for them to put down roots. It's hard for them to want to go on ahead and come and stay here. And the flip side of that coin is, if you don't have the rooftops and you don't have the demographics to support those new businesses coming in, you're just not going to get them. It's not as easy as people think. It's not, let's just go on ahead and set up a restaurant here. Let's go on ahead and set up a coffee shop here. You need to have the numbers work. You need to have accessible rents. You need to have a digestible market. And I think the other shift that we're starting to see is, back in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of desire to move out to the suburbs, to have a home, to drive into town for things. You know, you maybe have your neighborhood supermarket, but now we're wanting things within our neighborhood again, right? Your nice generation is looking for that walkability. We want to put our dog on a leash. We want to walk into the coffee shop, enjoy our latte, get them a puppuccino, and then go on ahead and walk back. You want to have that neighborhood park you can take your kids to, and you want to have that community within your own neighborhood. And so I think we're starting to see that trend come back. And really the thing that's going to drive that trend is, I'm about to say it, but density. You need infill, you need density. In a community like Tucson that was set up with a little bit more sprawl, we're seeing the gaps start to fill in. And I think that in general, young professionals need to take the initiative. They need to come to the meetings. They need to start these conversations, even if it's just in their peer groups, because I know not everybody's comfortable talking in public about these things, but talk about the kind of community you want to see. I could be off base. This is from conversations I've had with a lot of my peers. And what I'm hearing from them is that they want to be able to live in a community where they have access to a lot of amenities close by. And they want a community that is one where they can walk around at night and feel safe. They want a community that's engaging them just the way they engage it.
Yep. I was talking to Nikki Lee yesterday on the air, and she told about, she's a candidate for Ward 4 on the city council. She talked about when she knocked on a door and an 18-year-old came to the door, and she said, what is the one issue in Tucson that I can help the most to change? Like, well, if I could change one thing for you, like, what do you need out of Tucson? 18-year-old, right? He said, I want to feel safe.
Yep.
Right? I want to feel safe. So, I mean, these aren't issues that are just generational specific. I think everybody,
and they're not just in Tucson. You know, you see a lot of people moving to certain communities, even in Southern Arizona, because they feel safe. That's one of the things that Oro Valley's always touted.
Right.
Is it's a very safe community.
Number one in Arizona, right?
Number one, yep. And I think that the more often we can engage people to have these conversations, I think, and I've been there, it's intimidating. It's intimidating when you're younger and you don't have many years of experience to go in and say, well, this is what I want to see. Because I think historically, we've associated age with knowledge and experience and wisdom. And I'm not saying that's not the case, but I think there's a place for young professionals to voice their values. And I also think that we need to do a good job of supporting one another. You know, like I agree with a lot of your views. And so I do my best to further those and to bring those into conversations. And I think that's really where you get that. You have a lot of community leaders who are all working towards this, right? I talk on a frequent basis with Amber Smith at the Tucson Metro Chamber. I talk a lot with David Godlewski at Home Builders and also with Randy at Tucson Association of Realtors. And the conversations are all towards that. How do we have a community that's engaged? And how do we have a community that reflects what its residents want? And how do we really further that prosperous piece of it? How do we raise the median incomes. Yeah. How do we create a climate where businesses want to come? And it's just so many factors. It's your commercial rental lease. It's, you know, what's your rate? It's the housing. It's also the engagement. It's the stuff TYP does. It's all really one cohesive piece. And so I think fostering positive dialogue and engaging and then supporting one another is really where we're going to be able to move the needle.
Allison Solomon, I have about a minute or so. Let's end on this because this gets to the young professional engagement piece. I was talking to somebody in Phoenix again the other day, and they said, look, we don't have the community that Tucson has. We have the execution.
Sure.
Tucson has community.
We have
traditionally hasn't had execution. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really interesting analysis of our two cities. And often there's been seasons, kind of like the one we have now, where there is a little bit more collaboration and community partnership. What's the best way, and I got about 30 seconds for you, how do we take that into action? And how do young professionals be a part of it?
We have positive conversations and we engage in collaborative dialogue. It's about finding that common ground. You might not always be perfectly happy with the outcome, but if it's leading in the right direction, you're moving in the right direction.
You have an award coming
we
up
do,
about
yes.
common ground. Do you want to pitch that? We didn't plan on
yeah.
it, but do you want to pitch it? We got about 30 seconds.
It's our 15th year doing it, and it's an award that celebrates projects in the community who have overcome great obstacles through unique collaboration. So cool. we celebrate that coming together. We celebrate solving issues in a positive way that have a positive impact on our overall community. It's my favorite thing. I don't know how you get any better than celebrating good projects in the community.
Allison Solomon, young leader in the community. She just dropped her age on the air. It's now public information. Executive director of the Metropolitan Pima Alliance kicked off our Friday today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Zach.
When we come back, George Hammond will be in from the U of A with a regional economic update. Much more to go here on the Creative City Show. 10:30 The Voice. We'll see you in a minute. Tucson, happy Friday to you. Friday, September 6th. You are listening to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. We talk daily, Monday through Friday from 9 to 10, about people and ideas shaping and creating Tucson's future. The issues, the themes, the topics we debate, we envision, we discuss the key ones that will get us to our best possible future. And we're joined in studio to do that and to finish out our week here with George Hammond, the Economic and Business Research Center Director at the University of Arizona, with a Southern Arizona Economic Update. Plus, we're going to get into, I think, other themes as well. But George, thank you for being in studio.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure.
We shifted to our new time here on the show this week. So Tuesday, we shifted to 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And you were someone I was like, I got to have George on for this inaugural week. So I really appreciate your time and availability more than you know. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So let's get into it. Give us some of the highlights. How is Southern Arizona doing economically? What is new in the scene?
Yeah, you know, the Arizona economy generally continues to impress, right? We're adding jobs at a really rapid rate statewide. Arizona added over 76,000 jobs over the past year for 2.7% growth. That's much faster than national growth at 1.6. Phoenix is really the engine of growth in Arizona, added jobs at 3.2%, but Tucson is contributing. Okay. Tucson's job growth was 1.8%, so just beat the national average. So overall, you know, economic growth in Arizona and in Tucson continues to grind along at a really solid pace.
You know, it's interesting. This is just an editorial note. It's interesting how you say that. I heard someone the other day say, you know, well, something like 60% of U of A graduates stay in Arizona. And it's funny when you look at other metros, they'll say, well, they stay in our metro. We talk about Arizona as a whole, and we talk about Arizona job growth. So much of that in the same way is driven by Phoenix. But from an economic perspective, are you happy with that 1.8% number? Is that reasonable for Tucson? Could it, should it be more? How are we supposed to feel about that number?
Well, job growth in general is a good thing. You know, 1.8%, if we can sustain that for the year, that would be a pretty substantial boost to Tucson's job growth. Last year, we added about 4,000 jobs for 1.2% growth. So if we can keep it up, that would be actually a bit faster job growth this year than we saw last year. And actually, I think, you know, Tucson's growth in 2019 is going to be at about the same pace we saw last year. So in the neighborhood of 1.2%. And overall, Tucson does continue to grow. We are adding jobs, we're adding residents, our income is growing, but we're just not generating the kind of job growth and income growth that we see nationally, and not as fast as what we see in Phoenix. So Tucson definitely does have room for improvement.
From an economic perspective, besides maybe some of the obvious, what are some things that could be recommended, again, from an economic perspective, to boost that job growth? What are some of the principles? If we did these things, we would see an uptick.
Well, there's no silver bullet that's gonna generate much faster growth here in Tucson. You know, Tucson has been growing for a long time. It's been growing at a slower pace than we've seen in Phoenix, and that's been happening for a long time. I think part of the trick for Tucson is to improve educational attainment. You know, if we work at the share of working age college graduates in Tucson, you know, that's really key. It's a driver of innovation and productivity, and that's what really drives improvement in our standard of living. And, you know, Tucson's share of the working age population that has a bachelor's degree or better is actually below the national average. And we've fallen below the national average over the past 20 years. So that's really an area where Tucson needs to improve. And it starts with the K-12 schools, improving them, plowing more money into them. It starts with early childhood education. That's a really high return investment for a local community, particularly investing in kids at the schools in the low-income neighborhoods are key to invest in. That has all kinds of additional impact. So certainly investing in education, finding ways to attract and retain highly educated people will be key for Tucson continuing to grow, and we're not going to catch up in terms of income or job growth to Phoenix or even to the nation without significant improvement in those college attainment rates.
You know, it's interesting because we still do have and this is kind of the business I'm in, is the talent retention and attraction is, and again, I don't want to silver bulletize it, right? Economics is a complicated thing, but I think many would listen to what you just said and go, okay, you know, George, tell us, do we need the jobs to retain the talent, or do we need the talent to get the jobs? Because you look at a place like Denver, you look at Austin, you look at some of these regional cities, and we're talking 60, 70 plus percent of a young talent graduated workforce. And so to me, it's a chicken or an egg. Does the chicken come first or the egg come first? What do you advise?
Well, you need both. Focusing on just one won't do it. Right. So particularly focusing on things that young college graduates are looking for these days. Right. Nobody wants to move to a city with bad schools. Right. They're just not going to do it. And having a couple good schools isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. Right. The schools across the metro area have to be good because the kids coming out of the low performing schools, they're around the metro area. Right? They're not contributing in the way that they could to overall economic growth and the competitiveness of the region. Quality of life issues like housing costs, like the access to recreational amenities, the parks. My girlfriend and I just rode the loop around Tucson, the 54-mile loop, right? That's a great experience. Tucson has a lot to offer, but certainly finding ways to diversify the job mix away from the couple of big players that we have here in defense and aerospace, you know, the university, some of the leisure and hospitality players, finding ways to diversify that and to focus on the kinds of industries that are going to grow in the future and generate those high wage jobs is also something that we need to think about. So it's not easy. Every metropolitan area across the nation is thinking about these things and how to attract those highly educated young people. Tucson's got to compete there.
Yep, absolutely. Man, so much to get into, and I'm trying to on the fly figure out where this all goes. But let me ask you at least this question before we go to our first break, because we're going to talk about housing, we're going to talk about wages, things like that. Job, population, and income gains in Arizona and Phoenix are expected to outpace the nation during the next 30 years. But you also talk about a bit of a growth slowdown that's due to demographic shifts. Specifically, you cite the baby boom generation continues to retire in larger numbers. Explain that a little bit more of how does demographic shifts look to shape our region?
Yeah, and actually I think Tucson is going to outperform the nation over the next 30 years in terms of that job population and income growth. So Tucson does have the potential to outpace the U.S.,
Super.
Just not going to keep up with Phoenix. But nationally, in Arizona, Phoenix, and Tucson, we are going to see a slowing in those major aggregates. And what's driving that is demographics, right? It's the aging of the baby boom generation as baby boomers continue to retire in large numbers. Remember, the retirement of the baby boom generation hit high gear in 2011. So we're already well into this.
Okay.
And it's going to continue for at least another decade or two, that retirement of the baby boom generation. And when they retire, they're not working, right? So they're not contributing in that particular way to output growth and income growth. And that just means slower job growth overall. Now, that doesn't mean that Tucson can't continue to grow. We're going to continue to grow, but we're going to grow at a slower pace than we did during the, say, the previous 30-year period or the 30 years before the Great Recession. Everybody's looking at slower growth in jobs, population, and income. The key to focus on is what's going on with per capita measures, right? Scaled by population. And there, you know, Tucson's per capita personal income is 20% below the national average.
Yep.
I think we can make a little bit of progress there, but we're not going to catch up to the nation without doing a much better job of attracting and retaining highly educated workers.
I'll just tease this because I want to get an expert's view, because I've been talking about this on the air, but I'm not George Hammond, and I want to make sure that I'm tracking. But, you know, we talk about how, I mean, really since the 70s, George, if I got the numbers right, our incomes in Arizona have been lagging behind the country. Incomes continue to lag in Tucson, but cost of living doesn't. Right, our cost of living right now is right about the U.S. average. It used to be below the U.S. average. So I'm troubled by this fact that we're seeing an increase in cost of living, but we're not seeing an increase in our wages. And there's going to be a tipping point there. Am I on track or am I missing something?
Well, we track the cost of living data from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis on the MAP dashboard. And you could just Google MAP dashboard quickly find the site. The cost of living in Tucson is a bit below the national average, but not as far below as some people think. And it's only 3 or 4% below the national average. That's not enough to account for the
yes.
So wages are still low, even if we account for differences in cost of living locally. So it is an issue, and wage growth is the key, and educational attainment. The kinds of industries that are located here have a big impact on the kinds of wages that we pay. And there are other issues that matter as well. You know, Arizona's quality of life is really high, right? People love the climate here. I mean, I moved here from West Virginia, right? So my favorite thing is I don't have to shovel snow.
Absolutely.
Ever again in my life, I hope. Right? I don't have to mow grass here. All I do is kick some pebbles off my driveway every morning.
Right?
So people like Arizona, and they will move here if there is job growth. The thing is that on its own, that will push down wage growth, right? So you want to keep in mind that quality of life that we also much enjoy is a factor in Arizona's relatively low wages. You know, we also, our proximity to the border, at least in past decades, has resulted in labor supply, some of that flowing across the border, some legally, some not legal. That can also put downward pressure on wages and educational attainment, as our education levels have fallen below the national average. That's had a downward effect on our wage growth.
You know, this takes us, or with George Hammond, economic researcher at the University of Arizona. You head that up. And when we come back from the break, this is a great segue to talking about wage growth, some of the new job numbers that came out at a national level. What does that mean for us? What does that mean for Tucson? I also want to talk about housing, because you and the MAP dashboard and a lot of kind of community partners in Tucson, we have been looking at affordable housing. I talk about this all the time on the show. I was looking at, for example, my podcast, how many are downloaded. Some of the top podcasts, again, correlation, causation, I don't know, but my top podcasts had to do with housing. It's a big deal. I talk about it a lot. People want to talk about it. We're going to talk about it with George Hammond when we come back from the break. Tucson, don't go away. Stay strapped in. Our busy Friday is coming to a close, but not yet. We'll talk national job numbers and more with George Hammond after the break. 10:30 The Voice. Tucson, welcome back for part two of my interview with George Hammond as we wrap up this Friday. He's the Economic and Business Research Center Director at the University of Arizona. Real quick, George, talk to us about the national job growth numbers that we saw this week. What does that mean for the nation? What does that mean for Tucson?
Yeah, overall, the national economy is continuing to add jobs. We added about 130,000 jobs last month. That translates into 1.4% growth over the year. So nationally, job growth has been gradually slowing, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who puts out the data, expects for these preliminary numbers to actually be revised down early next year. So it looks like job growth is slowing nationally, but continues to grow. The national unemployment rate stayed steady at 3.7%. Arizona's rate is actually a bit above that at about 4.9%. So a little bit more labor slack here in Arizona. Actually, I think what's driving that is Arizona's dynamic labor market. We are drawing people from other states here for work, and we're actually drawing discouraged workers off the sidelines and back into the labor market. And typically when that happens, there's this little spell of unemployment that's associated with that. So Arizona's unemployment rate continues to fall from its peak, but we have had a little bit of a stabilization locally.
It's a really interesting note that sometimes if you just look at the unemployment number out of the context of getting back off the sidelines, right? That's something that we can't forget. Now, you talk a lot, George, about as well the housing market. I talked about a couple weeks ago, there's less than 3,000 units in the whole metro on the multiple listing service. Average housing prices are way out of whack with incomes. I think if you do the numbers, but you do the numbers. How is our housing affordability? What do you make of the situation right now?
Housing affordability is something that we've been tracking for a couple of years now on the MAP dashboard. And Jennifer Pullen, our MAP dashboard coordinator, has recently posted a couple of really nice articles on recent trends in house prices and housing affordability. There's no doubt that housing affordability has been declining in Tucson. Same thing is happening nationally and in Phoenix. Housing affordability in Tucson's now pretty close to where it was in 2000. So it's not as good as it was in, 2006 and 7 when house prices were falling rapidly. But, it's not as good as it was when we were coming out of the out of the Great Recession. One thing you want to keep in mind is even though house prices are rising faster than incomes, and that's an issue, that housing affordability here in Tucson is much better than most Western metro areas, certainly most better than those that we track on the MAP dashboard, and much better than the major metros in the West. San Diego housing affordability is about 15%. So 15% of the houses sold are affordable to a family making the median income. Tucson, that's a little over 66% of the housing. LA is at 10.6%. San Francisco, the median house price is $1.27 million, and that's about 6.9% of the housing sold in the first quarter of this year, and San Francisco is affordable to a family making the median, and the median family in San Francisco metro is $122,000.
Jeez.
So housing affordability is trending down, and that's an issue that we need to pay attention to. But you also want to keep in mind that housing is still much more affordable in Arizona and in Tucson than it is nationally on average, and much more affordable than most of the major Western metros.
You know, the recent stats that came out, maybe you can quick speak to this as a wrap up of the housing conversation. I think in the certainly since Q3 of 2018, the average home sale price of an already built home, there's a better term for that, but I can't think of it at the moment, was about 250K. The average new home price sale was over 300K. Yeah, I look at Tucson, and nationally, if you're in the creative field, tech, business, science, engineering, you are getting paid about $52,000 a year here. It's the worst in the large metro, you know, it's the worst in the nation. If you're making, you know, $35,000 to $55,000 a year anywhere near kind of some of our averages, is $250,000 to $300,000 for a house, is that still decent compared to the rest of the country, or?
Well, on average, you know, Tucson's housing is a bit more affordable. The one thing that we do note and talk about quite a bit on the MAP dashboard is that housing affordability, and we do it in the context of housing cost burdens.
Mm-hmm.
So a household is considered housing cost burdened if they pay more than 30% of the family's income for housing, taxes, insurance, and utilities. And about 130,000 households in Tucson in 2017 were housing cost burdened. That's about a third of the households here locally. And what we really notice is that for the higher income levels, say above $50,000, we have a smaller share of our overall households mm-hmm. that are housing cost burdened. But for the lower income groups, yes. This would be where people just starting out, we find that Tucson has a higher share of our households that are housing cost burden than right. nationally. So it really depends on where you look in the distribution. Renters face much higher housing cost burdens than do homeowners in general. And it matters where you are in your stage of life. If you're young and you're just starting out, it is tough to buy a house.
Yeah, which gets back to talent retention and gets back to jobs. And we need a whole hour, George Hammond. This half an hour thing isn't working for us. But I think what you were saying, I'm glad you brought up, because I forgot until you mentioned it. I think the numbers that I remember seeing is north of 35. If you're making 38 to 40,000 plus a year, Tucson is a really reasonable place to put down roots, make it happen. If you're making that kind of 35, 36 under, it's actually harder here than around the rest of the country. I think you were showing that drop off the other day, if I remember correctly.
Yes, absolutely. That is what we see. And check back on the MAP dashboard. In coming weeks, we just posted a housing cost burden article for cities and towns across southern Arizona. So you can really localize the data that we have. And we'll be doing more with this in coming weeks. We actually had a really cool webinar by a UA faculty member who studied manufactured housing.
Excellent.
Where it is and what kind of neighborhoods the manufactured housing yep. is in. So there's a really great webinar, 20-minute webinar. It's a quick listen.
Certainly, I think some creativity in our housing stock would not be a bad idea, and we're seeing that around the country. George, you shared a highlights of the long run forecast, Q3 of 2019. Some of that's what we're working off of here. We've got about 2 minutes left. Any final notes and any kind of calls to action from an economic perspective for our region? Anything we should be looking at and doing?
Yeah, one of the things that stands out to us is what we've talked about. You know, what drives Tucson's per capita income gap with the nation? You know, why are we 20% below the national average? It's wages and human capital, right? So educational attainment, education all along the spectrum from pre-K to K through 12, colleges. That's one key factor that can help us make mm-hmm. progress in terms of catching up to the nation.
So in terms of the question of what increases wages, education does. Anything else that will increase wages in our region?
Yeah, Arizona and Tucson need to continue to work on diversifying the local economy, focusing on those industries that are generating high wages. And with technological change, you know, automation, artificial intelligence, these are all things that we're talking more and more about. That's going to increase the pressure on the labor force to increase its skill levels and increase education.
George Hammond, again, thank you so much for your time. That's about all the time that we have, but I think we got through a lot of stuff. So I appreciate your time. Have a great weekend. We'll do this again soon, and let's keep making our region better. It is possible.
Absolutely. Thanks, Zach.
George Hammond, economic researcher out of the University of Arizona. He's the Economic and Business Research Center director, in fact, with a Southern Arizona economic update for us this morning. Tucson, that does it for our week. Our first week of our new time, I think, has gone really well. What do you think, Tucson? Let me know. TheCreativeCityShow@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Give us any thoughts or comments you didn't get to share today. Stick around for a lot of great radio coming up. Of course, on the local side, Bill Buckmaster coming up at the noon hour with his always full Friday show to close out the week. George Hammond and I are saying adios from the 1030 The Voice studio here. The Creative City Show will be back at 9 on Monday for another great week of talking about the people and ideas creating, shaping Tucson's future. The future is better than we think it is, and our potential is greater than we give ourselves credit for. We'll see you soon. Take care.